Start your day the Torah way, Rabbi Shalom Springer.
Good morning to you all. Golus starts in the Torah and is introduced in the following way. It's a conversation that the Rabbeinu Shel Olam is having with Avraham Avinu, and in Lech Lecha, Kapil Tes Vav, Pasuk Yud Gimel, Vayoyme LeAvram, the Rabbeinu Shel Olam says to Avram, Yodoya Teda, you shall surely know. Now we all learn at school that whenever the Torah repeats something, repeats a word, like Shomoya Tishmu, Yoro Yiyore, Sokol Yisokol, all those double words, it always means emphasis. And of course here it means it as well. Poshet Pshat, Yodoya Teda, you shall surely understand this well, understand this and know it well. Ki Geir Yezarech Oberes Lo Elohim, that your children are going to be Geirim in a land that is not theirs. Va'avodum, and they're going to be slaves, they're servitude. Ve'inu Oisom, and they're going to be persecuted. Arba Meois Shono, for 400 years. And then there's another pasuk which tells us that the Rabbeinu Shalom is going to redeem us and be done the nation that has enslaved us. But Lemaisa, here is an introduction to Golus, the first Golus that Yidden suffered, which was in Mitzrayim, but is introduced with these words, Yodoya Teda, Avram, you should know this well. Now we have Pshat, and of course we have also Drush. And in the Drush part, we have that the Medrash takes this much more literally in the sense that you have two Yediyas here. You have the Yodoya and you have the Teda. And what the Medrash does with this is to say the Yodoya is Golus. Teda is Geula. And puts Golus and Geula together as one flow of words. We already have a hint here, and we'll come to the Maharal to explain this more fully, that Golus and Geula go together somehow. And I'll tell you what the Medrash does with this. It tells us all the types of Golus that there are. There are three types of Golus that the Torah is hinting at, which the Medrash expands. Yodoya, which is the Golus part, She'ani Mefazrom, one of the Golusim that we're going to suffer, in fact we are suffering that Golus to the present day, Ani Mefazrom, I'm going to scatter Klal Yisrael. Teda, but here's the Geula coming, She'ani Mekabtzom, I'm going to gather them together and bring them back again. So one is the antidote of the other. That's Golus number one type. Golus number two is Yodoya She'ani Memashkenon, I'm going to, so to speak, use them as a mashkin. Now take the whole of Klal Yisrael and transport them somewhere else. And we know where that happened, when Golus Bavel, yeah? The Melech Bavel took Klal Yisrael and transported the whole of Klal Yisrael en bloc to Bavel. So I'm going to use them as a sort of mashkin. A mashkin is usually a pledge. Yeah, we have in Baba Kama, yeah, in the Gemara, a pledge that if somebody makes a loan and the person, the lender, isn't quite sure whether he'll get it back, so he asks for a mashkin. So you take off your gold watch and say, look here, keep this until I repay the loan. So that's the transaction. So we, Klal Yisrael, use as a mashkin, but the Rabbeinu Shalom says, Teda Shani Parakon, I will redeem this mashkin. I will repay the loan, and therefore Klal Yisrael will come back to their land. That's Golus number two. Golus type number three is Yodoya, you should know, the Golus will take the shape, Meshabdom, that they will be Meshubad to another nation, and Yodeda Shani Goelam, I will redeem them from that situation. Now here we're talking about a Golus, where Klal Yisrael is actually in Eretz Yisrael. They're in Eretz Yisrael, but they're not free. They're not free to keep the Torah. When did we have that Golus? Golus Yavon. Yavon was in charge, was in control, with the conquerors of Eretz Yisrael, and they were making all these gezeiros, which meant that life was getting harder and harder for Yidin Yavon. That is a Golus as well, even when we're in the right geographical place. The fact is, we're not free to conduct our Avodas Hashem as we should, then we're as in Golus as if we were transported to Yenek Velt. So these are the three Golusim that the Medrash says take place, and Taka, they've all taken place. And so we need to know what actually is Golus, and the Maharal explained this beautifully. What he says is that Golus is when we're not in the position that we should be. Let me give you a moshel. Supposing I have a very special pen, and this pen has got a pen holder, a very nice ornate pen holder on my desk. Whenever I've stopped using my pen, I put it back in the pen holder. Then the pen is in the place that it should be. So every time I use it, put it back. However, supposing I were to leave the pen on the windowsill, somewhere else, then that pen is in Golus. That pen is not in the place that it should be. So, under those circumstances, if I intend to put the pen back into the pen holder, then Davail, while it's on the windowsill, it's in Golus. The Maharal says this, using this moshel, the moshel's mine, but the Maharal is trying to tell us this, that whenever Klal Yisrael are not in the position that they should be, whether it's geographical, whether it's because another nation is sitting on them, in any situation where Klal Yisrael is not together and functioning harmoniously and properly as it should, then Klal Yisrael is in Golus. It's not in the right place. The pen is on the windowsill, but I intend to put it back. If it's temporary, then the pen is in Golus. But supposing I decided I quite like the pen on the windowsill, I quite like it there, and that's its new place, then from that moment onwards, the pen is no longer in Golus. It's now in a new place. And that's our position with Klal Yisrael as well. If we felt so comfortable in a land which is meant to be temporary, and of course there is great, you know, possibilities of that happening in the Malchus Shel Chesed, that we are, for example, today in a wonderful country that lets us do exactly what we like, more or less, and we have certain attacks on institutions, we know with Shechita and Bismila, we have to contend with those attacks. But Lemaisa, in general, on our day-to-day life, we can practice our Avodas Hashem as we wish. We can build institutions, nobody stops us, we can daven at all times of day, as they do in this particular one. And Lemaisa, no one interferes with us. We have a great temptation to be drawn into a country which, I like it here, it's good here. And therefore, the Maharal is warning us that the whole idea of Golos is that there has got to be a feature of temporiness. Once the temporiness goes, then you no longer have Golos. You'll say, well, so what? So I haven't got Golos. But we remember the pshat in Yodoya Teda. Yodoya Teda is fused together. That you can't have the Geula, the Teda, without having the Yodoya. So they go together. We can only have Geula if we've got Golos. That's the only way to have it. And that's why the Maharal says, this is what we're trying to do. We're trying to, so to speak, create for ourselves this Golos. And once we've got Golos, and once we have a recognition of Golos, the nation is together when it's Geula. Otherwise, we are scattered, or loss of identification, whichever the case may be, whether it's Mokoim, for example. And as we know, Pirkei Avos says, Ein lecha dovah she'ein lo mokoim. Yeah, Pirkei Avos, which is coming, I think, next week, Gimel. Ein lecha dovah she'ein lo mokoim. There is no place in the world that hasn't got its rightful place, the place that it should be. So everything has its place. And if they're not, if they're displaced, then they are in Golos. So we are in that situation. And, of course, we want to get out of that situation, which hopefully in this year we will discuss. What I'd like to do is to go back into the origins of this particular Golos and the destruction of the Bottom Mikdashos. And of course, Chazal tell us that it goes back to the story of the Meraglim. The Meraglim came back from their journey, from their sojourn in Eretz Yisrael. They came back on Tisha B'Av. They came back with this report about Eretz Acheles Yoshveha, and they held up the big fruit. We all know the story. Now, as a result of that, Klal Yisrael led a council of despair. We can't do it. It's impossible. You know, it's not going to happen. And they sat down and they cried. Bechia. So the Rabbeinu Shalom says, Atem bechisem bechia shel chinom. You cry when you had no reason to cry at all. Ani akava bechia ledoiris. I am going to establish this day as a bechia ledoiris. I'd like to discuss for a few minutes why is the result of what they did then a bechia ledoiris, the result that we're still suffering from today. And we know that Tisha B'Av has always been a terrible time, not only in regard to the destruction of the two Batei Mikdashos, but also even in the Holocaust. Apparently the Nazis were extra beastly during this particular period of July and August. They knew this was a Zman Poronis for us. So that has been taka for us, a Bechir Ledoiris. I'm sure a good historian could trace so many other cases where there is a spike in the sort of treatment that the Goyim have meted out against us during this particular period, that it has become a Bechir Ledoiris. I just take the last example. However, why is it that that's what happened with the Meraglim? I would like to suggest the following. Ken Zayin steht in Svarim, and if it doesn't, well, either you take it or leave it. Klal Yisrael, in the desert, were forming into their character. Their character was being formed by the behavior. We all know that Maaseh Ovesim Elabonim, the Klal, we usually apply it to the Oves and that generation, but even later on, when Klal Yisrael was shaping themselves into a nation, it was going to have ramifications for future doiris. It was going to have effects down the ages. So therefore, confronted by the message of the Meraglim, what should Klal Yisrael have done? What should they do? Here are these what big fruit. There are the giants. They are very powerful. Walled cities, weapons, etc. What should Klal Yisrael have done? And the answer is, for us, very simple. Klal Yisrael has already had ample evidence that the Rabbeinu Shalom can do everything, can vanquish every enemy, can flatten every foe, has no problem with anything at all. And we have a list of, besides the Mitzrayim, all those others that tried to attack Klal Yisrael had no chance against the Rabbeinu Shalom. Klal Yisrael have ample evidence. And what the reaction should have been, might have been, could have been, halavai it was to say, we don't have a problem. There are those mighty people, strong cities, the air that produces this fruit and giants. This is marvellous. This is wonderful. So that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu vanquishes them, we'll see extra power. It'll be a nifle de kazach. It'll be absolutely wonderful. We don't have a problem. What's the pshat? The pshat is that when we face a problem, how do we handle this problem? Do we have the Rabbeinu Shalom somewhere in the script? Or do we forget about it? Do we write the Rabbeinu Shalom out of the script and just rely on the normal resources? We're not strong enough to take such a... Yeah, exactly, you're not strong enough. You're not strong enough. You're not strong enough. But had your reaction been, we've got Rabbeinu Shalom on our side, we don't have a problem. Had that been their reaction, then that characteristic would have been Nishrash in Klal Yisrael. That would have been part of our characteristic forevermore. Confronted with a problem, we don't have a problem. That would have been part of the personality, the identification of Klal Yisrael. But on the other hand, what they did do, they sat down and cried. And that then was the part of the character that was sown. The seed was sown of that part of the character in Klal Yisrael. That when we're confronted with a problem, we look for other methods, newspapers and media, etc. All sorts of other methods we use to try and solve a problem, but no one remembers the Rabbeinu Shalom. And so that's why it's a Bechir L'Doiris, because that became part of the character of Klal Yisrael. That became part of who we are, and unfortunately, we have never overcome that to be the successful nation that we should be. And maybe we'll have methods of how we can counteract that. But that is the origin of Golus, and that is the origin of what the Torah is talking about and Chazal tell us. So we want to establish a different sort of behavior. Let's discuss for a moment about what the 3 weeks is all about, what Chazal have tried to do for us, and how they are teaching us to try and behave in another way, maybe in a way that is very difficult for us because we are separated by so many thousands of years, 2,000 years from the last base of Mikdash, 2,500 years from the previous base of Mikdash. It's a long time. A couple of thousand years is a long, long time in history. And it's very difficult to stretch our minds back and to put ourselves in a situation where we have a base of Mikdash. So Tisha B'Av can only make sense if we can somehow engender to create a sense of loss. If we can create a sense of loss, then maybe we can do that. Now, Reb Chaim Volozhin tries to paint for us a sort of picture of what the Beis HaMikdash meant to a person that was around and alive at the time of Beis HaMikdash. First, let me read you a little chazal. Bois HaShoah, the time of the destruction. Achas Siluk Hashkochas Hashem Yisborach, after HaKadosh Baruch Hu had removed his Hashkocha from the Beis HaMikdash, Nichnasu Oyevim Lehechol, the Oyevim, the enemies, came into the Hechol, Vasorfu Ba'esh, and they burnt it with fire. They burnt the bricks and mortar, whatever was left, in fire. V'kim Shesorfu, and after it was burning down, Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shuv Ein Li Mokoim, Ein Li Moishov, I've got no place anymore, Ba'oretz, Kolo Oretz Lav Shalihu, Loi Shalihu. So it was after the Shekhinah had left, and after the burning took place, the Ribbono Shel Olam says, there's no place for me anymore. I've got no place anymore. So the question about this is, well, the Ribbono Shel Olam is Meloikel Oretz. The Ribbono Shel Olam is everywhere. So the burning of the Beis HaMikdash, which already was sans the Shekhinah, already didn't have the Shekhinah around. So why does the Ribbono Shel Olam say, after Siluch HaShekhinah, I have no place anymore? Reb Chaim Volozhin explains this very nicely. He says that, you know, what did the Beis HaMikdash mean for a person in those days? Not only at the time of Oile Regel, but if a person felt a bit umedik, a person felt a bit depressed, maybe his farm wasn't going too well, the crops weren't coming up, what would he do? He would load his family onto a cart and clip-clop in the cart up to the Beis HaMikdash, and there he would see, you know, the Nisim in the Beis HaMikdash, the Asura Nisim, as enumerated, and he would get this lift, he would get this rise in spirit and emotion, and he would go back invigorated. He could go there and, sorry to use the phrase, recharge his batteries. Yeah, it's a rather hackneyed expression, but he could do that, and that was the Beis HaMikdash, a place to go, a place of focus. So in other words, although the Ribbono Shel Olam wasn't only there, but the Maaseh, it was a focus for Klal Yisrael that they could go there and they could get something emotional, spiritual, etc. from the Beis HaMikdash. So we had a focal point. When that focal point was no longer there because it was burnt to the ground, then the Ribbono Shel Olam says, where are the people going to come to experience a bit of Ribbono Shel Olam? There's nowhere for them to go, and therefore I have no place. Not pshat that I have no geographical place, he's Meloikel Oretz. But the people have nowhere to go, and therefore I have no place sort of in their lives. There's a story of Yirmiyah HaNovi was crying for the Churban. You know, Yirmiyah spanned both the prediction of the Churban, and he was actually present and there for a little bit afterwards. And based on Mikdash Rishon, of course. He was crying for the Churban, and a philosopher approached him with the following question. Why are you crying over bricks and mortar? Is this building? All right, so the building's not there. And Yirmiyah HaNovi explained to him the following. You know, we go through life, and if you're a thinking person, then sometimes you have sveikus. We all have sveikus. In different level, in different ways in which we live. Yirmiyah HaNovi must have had very, very deep sveikus, which we wouldn't even understand. Of a very high and spiritual and philosophical nature, presumably. But everyone in life has sveikus. So Yirmiyah explains to this philosopher, du verstehst nicht. When I have a sofek, what I used to do when we had a Beis HaMikdash, I go to the Beis HaMikdash. And my sofek was resolved. In his day, of course, there was a Sildur and Vitumim, possibly. Yeah, my sofek was resolved. Now I've got no place to go. I have to live with my sveikus, and there's no way of resolving any sveikus. And it's true for me, it's true for the common man. So all of us have to live with the sveikus where previously we could go somewhere and have those sveikus resolved in some way. He's explaining this, that's what Klal Yisrael got from the Beis HaMikdash in a very, very practical sense. And now, of course, we haven't got that. You know, there is something that always I'm reminded of a certain incident that I remember. I saw something very, very far that I wanted to see. But when Klal Yisrael, and I was really overjoyed by seeing it from a very great distance. And when Klal Yisrael went to the base of Mikdosh, of course, what would they see first? They would see from a great distance the column of smoke rising. There was a column of smoke from the Marocha. It would rise up in a straight line, yeah, absolutely vertical. And even if there was wind, the wind didn't disturb the column of smoke. Presumably even in a howling gale, you know, that smoke went straight up. So for miles and miles away, as they were coming with the awesome cart, they already got that lift of feeling, I'm going to approach the base of Mikdosh. So that's what it gave a person in those days. And of course, the Churban causes a cessation of the Hashoras HaShchinah for us. And they made every effort at the time. They lowered buckets of silver, buckets of gold, etc., in order to carry on the Korban Tomid. And so the Rebbein Shalom says, now we have no place. The Klal Yisrael have no place to go. The world is no longer mine. Now, the two Bote Mikdoshos, we know, were destroyed. And the Maral lays out very beautifully how and why they were destroyed. But before we discuss how they're destroyed, we've got to talk for a few moments about how we got them in the first place. Let's start with the first base of Mikdosh. The Gemara says that the base of Mikdosh was destroyed because Klal Yisrael were over the three cardinal sins: Shvichas Domim, Gila Royas, Avodah Zorah. And because we were perpetrating those sins, we were over those Averas, that's why we lost the first base of Mikdosh. Says the Maharal, what is the connection? I understand there are various chamuras ma'id, you know, no doubt about it. What's it got to do with the loss of the base of Mikdosh? And the answer he says is as I. Let me introduce you to a concept. I'm sure you're very familiar with it anyway, but I'll say it for anybody that doesn't happen to be familiar. There is a concept in Kabbalah called Isarusa de la'ela, and another one called Isarusa de la tato. Isarusa de la'ela means hashpos from Shemayim, in such a way that we don't have to do anything for them necessarily. We don't necessarily have to be zoicha. There are shpos that are sort of freebies, min hashemayim, isarusa de la'ela, zoiris milamala. And that's how we got the first base of Mikdosh. Not any merit of Klal Yisrael particularly. It was isarusa de la'ela because of the Ovis. The Ovis was so close to the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. And with their Midas, Avram with Chesed, Yitzchok with Gevura, Yaakov with Emes, those Midas were the source for Klal Yisrael that they would get a base of Mikdosh. So we got a base of Mikdosh on the back of, so to speak, being supported by the Ovis. So the first base of Mikdosh rests on three pillars. The pillar of Avram, Chesed. The pillar of Yitzchak, Gvura. And the pillar of Yaakov, Emes. Those are, imagine a building supported by three giant pillars. So Maral explains that when we committed the Avera of Gilu Aroyas, we lost the pillar of Avraham of Chesed. There is a connection between Gilu Aroyas and Chesed. You might think, you know, what is the connection? By the way, just to point out, one of the Aroyas mentioned in Kedoshim is called Chesed Hu. Yeah, one of them. Chesed Hu, amazingly enough. And the answer is, as those who explain the Maral himself explains, that chesed is very nice. It's a wonderful thing to do, chesed. But even chesed has to be bounded sometimes. Chesed, you've got to be able to say no. Not everything that everybody asks you, yes to this, yes to that. Because if you say yes to everything, you land up in a place where you shouldn't be. You're doing things which you know are wrong, but because you're such a good person, and you can never say no, and therefore you might land up even with Gilo Arroyas. And that's exactly what happened with Klal Yisrael. Maybe they were great Bali Chesed, but when Chesed goes wrong, that leads to terrible things. And so when they started doing Gil Aroyas, they lost the Chesed that Avraham Avinu was practicing, and down came pillar number one, came crashing down as we lost one of the supports of the Beis HaMikdosh. And then on to Gevura. Yitzchak was a man of strength, self-discipline, a man who, you know, could control all his emotions and his drives and his urges. Yitzchak Avinu was a very special sort of person, and that was one of the pillars of the Beis HaMikdosh. Now, it's very nice to be a disciplined person. When you're over-disciplined, and when you need everything to go your way, then the result is a son like Esav. Esav had Yitzchak's characteristics. Only Esav is Yitzchak distorted, gone wrong. It's got to go my way. When I'm angry, I flatten other people. I eliminate the opposition. That's Esav. So, in other words, we're talking about Shvichas Domim. When Yitzchak's Midah goes wrong and is distorted, then it leads to Shvichas Domim. When Klal Yisrael practices Shvichas Domim because people were parking on their space, it's my space, car park, you don't park here, it's my path. When we were getting that makpid on each other, led to Shvichas Domim. Very hard to imagine that Klal Yisrael were actually killing each other, whether it means it literally or not, I don't know. But Lamaisa state in Gemara that they were doing Shvichas Domim. And under those circumstances, the Gevurah of Yitzchak is so distorted, so corrupted, that, of course, Yitzchak's pillar supporting the Beis HaMikdosh comes crashing down. And finally, they were practicing Avodah Zorah. You cannot have a greater sheker than Avodah Zorah. Yeah? Avodah Zorah means that you have left the Rabbeinu Shalom, Chas V'Shalom, you've taken on something else greater. And of course, Titin Emes Liyakov, you've completely negated Titin Emes Liyakov, and the third pillar, yeah, is no more, and the Beis HaMikdosh just doesn't exist because it has no foundation anymore. That's how the Maharal explains the creation of the first Beis HaMikdosh and the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdosh. What about the second Beis HaMikdosh? As you know, when Ezra led the people up to Eretz Yisrael after the Churban Bayis Rishon and the 70 years in which the Purim story happens, and then they built the second Beis HaMikdosh, There was tremendous achdus in Klal Yisrael. As they marched, they sang together, etc. Lots of them, the sound of the tools and the hammering of the Beis HaMikdosh. So tremendous achdus, and people came to watch. Wonderful scene. In other words, we're talking about a Beis HaMikdosh being built on the basis of Isarusa de la Tator. That was our zchus. The schus was ours, and that's why Tucker the Beis HaMikdosh was a bit different, was quite a bit different, didn't have the Asur Nissin, for example, and other things. The Shekhinah wasn't as evident in the second Beis HaMikdosh because it's just little us, so to speak, rather than the of us supporting it. There are all explanations as to why we understand the Beis HaMikdosh Sheni was so different from the Beis HaMikdosh Rishon. But the Maisa, we had a Beis HaMikdosh, which was the schus of Klal Yisrael and the achdus of Klal Yisrael. What is the one safe ingredient that can be sure that breaks achdus? What breaks achdus is, of course, sinas chinam. Chazal tell us, second Beis HaMikdosh was destroyed because of sinas chinam. Once we have sinas chinam, we have no achdus anymore. If we've got no achdus, then the Beis HaMikdosh isn't supported by anything. And, of course, by itself, it implodes. By itself, it is no more because it doesn't have any basis anymore. That's the Maharal. Explain to us how we have a Beis HaMikdosh and now we no longer have a Beis HaMikdosh. Well, so we come to the story, of course, of Kamsam Bar Kamsam. I'm not going into detail, because everybody knows the story. It ends off that when he's thrown out of the banqueting hall, he says that I protested, and the Rabbonon, who was sitting there, heard it, and they didn't say a word, vice the chais, that it seems that they were maskim. That's what he says, and then he goes off to do his terrible things with the Romans. The Maisa, we've got to ask the Kasha. Why is it that the Rabbonon said nothing? Surely there would have been somebody who would get up and say, this, yeah, just toiknish, loizu haderech, or something. And the answer is that the rich people at the time had such control that no one dared say anything. I don't know, maybe their funding for their Beis HaMikdosh would be stopped or whatever it might be. Because the wealthy people, corrupted people, were so much in charge that no one dared say a word. That's the situation in which we were then. And that's a sort of explanation. So, how can we link in with what we meant to do? How can we make something of the 3 weeks to correct all these situations? Now, the Sefer Chinuch has got a klal which he explains to us many times to the Sefer, many, many mitzvahs. He gives us an introduction of how Yiddishkeit works. It's a principle of how it works. Now, we all know that when we have an emotion or a thought, emotions and thoughts, it leads to action. Someone's very, you know, concerned about something, you'll take action. So thoughts and feelings lead to action. Everyone knows that. That's how the world works most of the time. The Chinuch says, actually, Yiddishkeit works in the other way. Of course, thoughts and feelings create action. But action also creates thoughts and feelings. And that's why Chazal have given us a whole menu of different things to do throughout the year. Doesn't matter what Yom Tov, what occasion, Chazal tell us how to do it. And by putting us into a certain environment, a certain situation, whether it's Shabbos with white tablecloth and candles and wine, etc., which creates a mood for us, or Purim, go and dance about, put a funny hat on, yeah, drink some wine. And if you do those things that a happy person would do, that creates the right feelings and thoughts of happiness, even if you've had a sort of some bad news. Or, okay, and Tisha B'Av, we come to Tisha B'Av, you may have had, I don't know, exam results, which, excellent, they always come out in August, so the students are very happy, dance about. But it's Tisha B'Av. And Chazal tell us, sit on the floor, you know, cry your eyes out, say Eicha, and you will feel sad, even if you have the most wonderful, you will, if you do the actions lead to a certain thoughts and feelings. And that's what Chazal want to create with the whole of the Torah. That's why our religion, I hesitate to use that word, our Yahadus, our Judaism, Yiddishkeit, is all based on action, because the action creates the right sort of thoughts and moods, etc., which Chazal want us to have. And so that's what they've done, really, with the 3 weeks. Let me just suggest something to you that might help us. As we said before, we're a long way in terms of time from the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. We don't know anybody that knows anybody that knew anybody that had any shack of the Beis HaMikdash. It's so long ago. There's one incident in Bereshis where, after 22 years of separation, Yaakov and Yosef meet each other at last. And the psukim there, Vayipal al Tzavoroi, that Yosef embraces Yaakov, but Yaakov doesn't embrace Yosef. Shaila's why? Rashi tells us why. Because Yaakov was saying Krishma at that moment. And of course, Allah Frank the Kasha, he's got to use that moment to say Krishma. I heard it first here in this town from the Master Rosh Hashiva when I was in Yeshiva. This Kasha and the Teretz. Just that moment, he's got to say Krishma, say 5 minutes later. Dasa Devot. That is a welling up of emotion. Yaakov must have been in such an emotional state. And he takes this emotion and diverts it into that Kriyashma. This Kriyashma is an unrepeatable offer. He'll never have something like this again. He'll have a Kriyashma which cannot be done again. He'll never have this feeling, overwhelming and completely overcoming feeling of emotion that he had at that moment where he met Yosef. And he can divert it and put it into that Kriyashma. I want to take a leaf of that book and tell us what Chazal are trying to do for us with the 3 weeks. Chazal tell us, you know, start off the 3 weeks and don't listen to music, don't say Shechiyanu, and if you are the dinim for the 3 weeks. That is also a first sense of deprivation. I'm deprived of the normal comforts that I have. Chazal say, deprive ourselves of it. And then they turn the screw slightly and say, 9 days, you know, in the 9 days, or the Svardim Shurish Chalboi, now don't even eat meat or drink wine. Don't wash properly. Don't wear fresh clothes. And that actually gives us a physical feeling of discomfort. We're actually meant to feel uncomfortable. Leading, of course, onto Tisha B'Av itself, where we are deprived of materials that we have to live on. We couldn't survive without food or drink on Tisha B'Av. We put ourselves into a situation of potential sakana. What's it all about? I'd like to suggest the following. Taking a leaf out of the Maisa of Yaakov and Yosef, where Yaakov diverts this emotion, this tremendously powerful emotion, onto this Kriyas Shema, Chazal are suggesting to us that we can do the same. By proving the 3 weeks, by doing what we do, by deprivation, both personal, physical, etc., we can sense a feeling of loss for something that we didn't know, but we are going to divert, we are going to dedicate that feeling of loss, that discomfort that we feel, we can't put on a crackling white shirt. Yeah, that feeling of discomfort, we can divert to the Beis HaMikdash. And if we go through the words of Chaim Volozhin that we did before, of what the Beis HaMikdash gave to us, at least intellectually, even if we can't feel it, then we can use those feelings and those ideas to get ourselves into the mood of feeling a loss for the Beis HaMikdash, just like we are feeling a loss of our usual comforts. And I'd like to suggest something, that on the basis of Chazal, which says that Mishaloi Bono Besa Midrash Biyomo, someone who has not lived through a resurrection of the Beis HaMikdash, a building of the Beis HaMikdash, Ma Le'olov Ki'ilu Machrivoi. The Chazal reckon it, or Rabbi Shalom reckons it, as if we had a Beis HaMikdash and we destroyed it. Sounds very, very harsh. But this is a message of such positive quality. What it's saying is that in every generation there is a possibility of building a Beis HaMikdash. It's not that we say, well, our others didn't. Our grandfathers are much greater tzaddikim than we are. And our great-grandfathers, Chassam Sofer, and Kivega, and all of the lineage of people that lived in the past, they couldn't build a Beis HaMikdash. How do you think we're going to have half a chance? But Chazal tell us that every generation has a chance to build a Beis HaMikdash. And the answer is that the tzidkus of other generations is cumulative. It just wasn't enough to tip the balance. And maybe our generation will be. And therefore I want to suggest that although maybe we can't bring down the Swiss of us, we don't have the power to do that. What we can do is at least concentrate a little bit on the second Beis HaMikdash, which we know was destroyed because of Sinas Chinom, which broke up the Achdus of Klal Yisrael. I know everybody talks about this, you know, Achdus, we've got to have Achdus, what exactly it means. Rav Matisyahu, in another shir, explains how we can do something which will help to bring and build, rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. He talks about the mid of MS. The mid of MS goes very, very far, and of course that is also connected with the Lashon Hara, how we use our language, how we use our power of words. The Chafetz Chaim says in yesterday's Sedra, Bilom ben Ba'oya horugu b'chorev. Bilom ben Ba'oya was killed with a sword. I care how Bilom ben Ba'oya was killed with this or with that, with the sword. And the Chafetz Chaim says so interestingly, he quotes the Rashi on the spot there, who says that Bilom, what he did was, he was machliv his weapons for the weapons of Klal Yisrael. He tried to use Dibur to curse Klal Yisrael. So what Klal Yisrael do now is use his weapons, which is Al-Khar B'Chosichia, the weapons of the Goyim that were used against him. Therefore, the Torah points out that Bilam was killed with a sword. But, says the Chofetz Chaim, we see from here that Klal Yisrael's patent, Klal Yisrael's weapon is Dibur. That's how we work. That's how we function. That's who we are. And therefore, Rav Matisyahu tells us that in the mid of MS, which was an essential for Geula, without MS there is no Geula. MS extends to the part of Dibur, which is just gossip, idle gossip, not telling any Lashon Hara, idle gossip, or giving away a soid, giving away somebody's confidence. Somebody's confided in you, given you a secret, and you let it out somehow or other. That is also part of our Koyach HaDibur. And therefore, extending it to that, never mind about Achdus, etc., that's terribly important. If we can do it, so it should be. But in our speech, if we can restrict ourselves from speaking not only those things that we mustn't speak, but even those things that we may speak, but they're out of turn and unnecessary, then, says Rav Matisyahu, it's an ingredient for bringing the Geula Shleima B'Heira B'Yameinu.